Representatives of the union tentatively agree to that, subject to a vote of the membership. Would folks like Mr. Sargent be able to vote on that?
Not under, I guess there are a couple of answers. Under the union rule, clearly not. Clearly the union's rule is that casual employees do not get to vote on collective bargaining agreements. The remedy, if there were to be one, would, it seems to the union, clearly be a claim that the union had breached its duty of fair representation. Clearly the union has to represent fairly the interests of its casual members as well as...
This rule precluded members of the union, which Mr. Sargent clearly is, from voting on matters that did not directly impact them.
The language of the bylaw, and this does get us back to that first issue, the language of the bylaw is, uses this phrase, directly involved. But the union has always interpreted and defined that as a term of art, directly involved. And what the union has said is seniority employees and members who take on responsibilities to their employer, as well as just getting the benefits that a casual gets from the employer.
So you're telling us that the phrase directly involved, quote unquote, in the union's mind and in its interpretation, is that even a contract ratification which eliminated the jobs of non-seniority casuals or all casuals would not directly impact that class of folks?
I think I would rephrase that, because the union rule is not...
You don't get to rephrase. You get to answer my question.
Well, and I promise I'll answer your question. The important thing is that the rule is not focused, the bylaw is not focused on the content of the collective bargaining agreement. The rule is completely...
But how could it not be?
Well, because...
When it uses the language directly involved.
Well, as
what
I...
What if management came to the union and said, we don't like Sargent? He's a troublemaker, he's smart as hell, he's a gadfly, and we'll double the wages of your regular employees if you will get rid of this guy.
And that would clearly,
or not contest his being fired.
And that would clearly be a breach of the union's duty of fair representation, which is a separate legal obligation to represent.
Your interpretation is even that scenario would not be, quote, directly involved.
That is correct, because directly involved is a term of art which is defined as being seniority employees.
Directly involved relates to the right to vote on a contract.
That's correct.
It doesn't relate to the individual's right to go through the grievance procedure.
That's correct.
Or at least through the internal union grievance procedure.
And under the contract as well.
It's either with the international or with the court.
Right.
If you discriminate against him.
That's correct.
I just want to be clear about this,
right,
that even a contract ratification that called for the elimination of the jobs of half of your membership would not constitute, quote, directly involved.
The question from the union, if you were to file an appeal within the union and said, I was directly involved, I was not allowed to vote. The test for whether you are directly involved is whether you are a seniority employee. It does not have anything to do with the actual effect on you of a contract. And let me just say a little bit about over...
Let me ask you this question. If you had a union membership of 1,000 people, mm-hmm, and an employer that hired 9 regular employees and 2 casual employees, and every member of the union of those 1,000 had a right to be a casual employee. If you said that all casual employees could vote, or all those who had an interest, would that mean all 1,000 could vote on the contract affecting the 10?
If I understand the question, if the question is, would it be a reasonable union rule?
Well, not reasonable.
Yes.
I said if you interpreted the rule the other way, that you can't prohibit anyone who has an interest, is not an employee of the company,
right, but
just works there when he feels like it, and you had, let's say, 80 people who worked there full-time, that was their livelihood, and you had 2,000 people who had a right... When they needed people from time to time, every week they needed somebody, and they'd call any of the 2,000 members. if your rule directly involved could not limit it to the vote, to the 80 who work there, whose jobs are there, would that mean you would have to allow the full 2,000 to vote?
Absolutely. Under Mr. Sargent's interpretation, casuals who worked one day in 3 years have the right and cannot be excluded because, in fact, if you worked one day in 3 years, there is an impact. There would be an impact on you, for example, if the employer and the union were to agree to eliminate the casual job classification. I think we have...
Our industries like that. I mean, where people just get called in from the master list of everybody in the union.
Right. Then you'd have to let everyone vote. And the bottom line is, I think that all rules have to be looked at. We have to look at it in this context. There might be a scenario in which a given union rule would be unreasonable because the anti-democratic effect of that rule exceeded the justification to the union. In this scenario...
How do you find an answer to that question, whether the... This is one of our wonderful balancing tests. Where would you look to see?
Well, I think where you have to start is the presumption that the federal bench was not intended to micromanage union decisions. And that's where I thought it was significant, and Judge Armstrong, I think, disagreed, that this rule is not based on invidious characteristics. And I think that what I attempted to emphasize in the brief, the fact it's not even an immutable characteristic. It's not a rule that says you have to...
This act wasn't passed to deal with that kind of problem. It was passed to deal with a perceived lack of democracy on the part of Senator Griffin and Representative Landrum, who were terribly concerned about workers' rights.
Right, but I think to answer your question about how you do that balancing act, it's worth noting and giving emphasis to that this rule... I think the significance of the admission of Mr. Sargent at oral argument in the district court, I say, well, he actually had been offered twice the opportunity to work more, take more responsibilities to Golden Gate, and then he would be able to vote.
Well, he said that. He said he was not interested in the full-time job.
That's right.
He wanted to be a casual.
I think that the democratic effect, normally when we look at the anti-democratic effect of any rule, and including the LMRDA cases interpreting various different union rules, they say things like, well, any rule that says you have to have worked for 6 years before you can vote, that's really a burden because 6 years is a long term. Or a rule that says you have to attend 95% of the union meetings before you can vote. A rule that says you have to say yes when the employer calls you to give you work does not seem to have the same, it just does not impose the same burden. The record indicates undisputed that any employee of Golden Gate and any member of the union who is interested in being able to vote has to simply step up to the bar and take some responsibility. And it's also not insignificant, I think, that Mr. Sargent and the other casuals can attempt to vote Ms. Cecitano out of office. They can run for office themselves. They can attempt to amend the bylaw that defines directly involved. So if you had a situation with 100 casuals and 10 regular employees, they presumably would have the votes within the union to change the bylaw and say, you know, we want the union to act more on our behalf. Finally, there is this issue that it is not as if the union then is unconstrained, and I do think Judge Hawkins' point it needs to be addressed face on. The union is not unconstrained. It cannot simply throw its casual employees to the wolves. It certainly cannot throw Mr. Sargent to the wolves in the one example that Judge Hawkins gave.
The plaintiff to the wolves in the sense that it can discipline him for doing something because they don't like what he's doing. But they do have the right to favor one category of employee over another without being held to have discriminated.
And I guess
they don't have a remedy for unfair representation if you favor regular employees over casual employees.
And I guess maybe, and we're in an interesting area of the law, but maybe we would need to borrow from those cases interpreting the duty of fair representation and say, well, if in fact the union could lawfully, without breaching its duty to a casual, sign a contract that eliminated all casual employment, then maybe that tells us something about the general standard of review of union decisions, and we could perhaps import that to some extent in this reasonableness distinction.
Well, there are three places that there's a solution for casuals who are dissatisfied. One is the suit for the breach of the duty of fair representation. That's really not available if you're discriminating against one group of employees to benefit another. The second is, as you said, in the internal union mechanism, where they have the right to adopt, participate in elections and try to have the union adopt any policy it wants. One's available, the other isn't, and we're talking about the third that sort of falls in the middle, which is, do they have a right to vote on the contract?
And there's actually a fourth that's worth noting, because Mr. Sargent brought it below, which is he also sued the union claiming that it had violated its constitution by the way it interpreted directly involved, and he lost on that in the district court, and he did not appeal that to you. He brought a Section 301 action saying the union breached its constitution. But I do think it's worth noting that under that duty of fair representation, the act, which might otherwise seem shocking, that the union could decide we want all full-time jobs, we're going to get rid of all the casual employees, is not actually shocking to the federal judiciary. It's clear, I believe, that the DFR cases would say, well, that's a reasonable distinction. It's important to have regular part-time and full-time jobs, and that's a valid union interest. In this case, it was a very important employer interest as well. I do think that we need to respect the union's interpretation of directly involved as being
you, like Mr. Sargent, are 50% over.
If I could just, in closing, note that any rule is going to be potentially over-inclusive or under-inclusive, and so the test is not to find one scenario where a rule might seem unfair to a particular employee, but instead to try to say, on balance, does it seem a reasonable way for the union to accomplish its interests without imposing excessive hardship on any group of its members. Thank you very much.
Mr. Sargent.
Well, you know, Judge Armstrong of the district court didn't really find the rule reasonable. She did the balancing act, and as a matter of fact, stated the rule was blatantly discriminatory and blatantly anti-democratic. I think politely suggests where she went wrong is with the mitigating factors, because I could vote in other union elections and had some other rights. I would submit to you that that is not, in the balancing test, that is a...
Well, I don't know whether she said it's blatantly undemocratic. I would say that.
I think she did.
That's somewhat of an exaggeration. There are lots of other members of the union. If this were a rule that applied to more than if the union represents more than this one employer.
Of course.
Then there are lots of union members who are not allowed to vote on this contract, even though every contract they enter into has a substantial effect. In fact, in many union employer contracts, they say that any contract you enter into has a favored nations clause. I mean, it'll affect every other contract. But even if you don't have that, the wage scale you agree to with employer A is going to affect the employees at employer B. Yet you can have only the employees of employer A vote on it. So it's undemocratic in the sense that not every union member is allowed to vote on the ratification of a particular contract, only those directly affected. And the question is it reasonable to say only those who are willing to take jobs here, as opposed to occasionally accepting an assignment if they feel like it?
Well, Your Honor, I just suggest this, that the whole premise of how easy it is for us to get jobs, including attaining seniority, I don't believe to be true.
Well, unfortunately, the record in the case is that it is easy.
Well, I
you had that opportunity twice in the last few months.
Right. Well, yes, to turn down full and part-time jobs, and you're entirely correct that I choose to be a casual. But the union is implying that I could very easily get enough work to obtain seniority casual status and thereby vote. And that is absolutely not true. And I would suggest to the court it's absolutely now not true, because the union chose to eliminate five permanent casual shifts and create two full-time jobs, which in effect reduces our chances of ever getting seniority. I further suggest to the court that the union declaration, they said that for 25 years they have interpreted that directly involved standard. And I think what the balancing test calls for in that situation is to look at the anti-democratic effects of the rule versus the union's right to protect itself as an institution. I would submit to this court that the union hasn't shown they need any protection here. We're not the enemy. And in several other regions, of course, these casuals do vote without these horrible consequences. You mentioned the duty of fair representation, and that's an excellent question. To prove it in negotiations, as you said, is near impossible. If the union shows up at the bargaining table and talks a little bit, you'd play hell ever getting sustaining a DFR charge against them. However, in the scenario that you set out, eliminating all the casual jobs, it would still be very difficult for an employee to file a DFR charge. The union would have to have some sort of reason.
I agree with you all about right. that. I think it's you can favor one class of employees over another, and you're not going to be able to win an unfair representation case.
Right.
Because they leave those decisions.
I'm sorry?
They leave those decisions to the union.
Absolutely do, and in many cases, properly so. They won't second-guess a union, in many cases, with a representational role. Unfortunately, what this really does to non-seniority casuals, if we have no protection, no way to protect ourselves, the only way we'd be able to protect ourselves is be given the right to vote on these vital issues that concern
You can influence the policy of the union in union elections, internal union affairs. You have a full right to participate there.
And well, I would suggest
disagree with the policy of the leaders of the union. You have a right to seek their recall, I assume. It's one of those wonderful reforms we have, is the recall system. But you can, and you can get up on the floor of the union meeting and say, these leaders are selling us out. Look what they're doing to the casuals. You know, let's get rid of them.
Well, I'd respond to that in the following way. Ms. Cecchitano, the regional director, was recently reelected to her position for the term of 3 years. I believe the union mailed out over 300 ballots because they represent several employers and a lot of other bargainings within Golden Gate Transit. I would suggest to you that 10 non-seniority casuals, although theoretically have the right to change things, the reality is we have hardly any right at all to make those changes.
All right. If you have something important you want to say in rebuttal, why don't you?
I'm sorry?
I said if you have something further that's important that you want to say during rebuttal, take the next minute and sit down.
I certainly will. Thank you very much. I'd like to also suggest to this court regarding electing union officers and other remedies in the future, that's of little good when the damage has already been done, and I think that's the principal reasoning behind the Zamora case. The remedy really can't solve the problem that exists. I would also submit to this court that, although I'm not a lawyer, I have thoroughly reviewed the cases before you. I can find no case where 50% of a bargaining unit was discriminated against and not allowed to vote, and that rule was upheld. And I'll leave it at that, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Sears.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me present my case.
You've done a remarkable job without legal training.
I appreciate that compliment.
Case just argued will be submitted.